Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the 1-2, and that one lifted high and deep into center field. Perkins going back to the track. He runs out of room. It's gone. Jake Berger with a home run just a little to the left of straightaway center field. He puts Texas on the board here at 2-1.
That man will be joining us at 8 o'clock to talk about the incredible run continuing of the Texas Rangers. They sweep Milwaukee. They sweep the Brewers 6-3, the final. They've won four straight, 15 of 20, seven games over 500 for the first time this season. 2.5 back in the West, 1.5 back in the wild card. Day off today. You get the struggling New York Mets starting tomorrow in New York, and they have lost five straight. Bruce Bochy was hilarious yesterday on the KNC Masterpiece. These new young kids have been deemed the Little Rascals. And KNC asked Boch if, I guess, number one, did he know who they were? Does he know the reference? And does he agree?
It's fun to watch them because they, you know, you look at, you know, the Freemans, Sunlins, these guys do remind you of the Little Rascals. They're just running around this clubhouse. And if you didn't know them, you may think, you know, they're the bat boy. And, you know, they're just having a lot of fun. And they're, I tell you what, they're playing with joy. That's what I love, man. When they do something well, they show it. And I think it has gotten infectious around the clubhouse.
Jake Berger, the offensive hero, yesterday with two home runs. Since July 4th, the slash line is this from Sandler: 333, 372, 605, 977. Six home runs, 20 runs batted in 26 games.
He's been good. He's one of the many that have stepped up and played at a level above where they had been throughout the season. And it's coming at just the right time. The Little Rascals nickname, I like it. You know how we've had in the past, like they had the Claw one year and then they did their Ducks on a Pond. If they're going to be the Little Rascals, are we going to get the Ote? Are we going to get the big wave? I think we should get the big Ote wave. Do you even know what Ote means, Peyton?
Mm-mm, no.
Nope, not a bit. Damn it. That's just so sad.
I knew Little Rascals, though. I was waiting for that question. I would have nailed that.
Well, that is Little Rascals, what I just referenced. So.
So the Rangers are rolling. Tolo D is upset. She goes, hottest team in baseball. No coverage this morning on ESPN. That is not going to happen, Mama D. In fact, if you're in New York, right, you're like, okay, I feel like I should buy a ticket to this series, but who am I going to see?
Oh, they're buying a ticket to this series. This is the first DeGrom return of the Mets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This will be, because there was, that was one that they were supposed to get it 2 years ago, and they didn't, and everybody was all disappointed with it. So, I mean, this is, they thought they were going to get it 23, 24, now 25 at the end of the season. They're finally, after basically 3 years, going to see him return.
Let's see, is the,
he's Friday.
Yeah. Tickets, just $17.
17?
Those tickets as low as $17. Meanwhile,
on Game Time.
Yes. Meanwhile, the Rays Cubs, the lowest ticket is 32. Royals Phillies is 33. Red Sox Yankees is 119. And you're getting Met fans out there at $17.
Jadeveon Clowney left Frisco yesterday without signing a contract. Josina Anderson has been all over this. She said the plan was for Clowney to go to DFW for a visit and a physical. He leaves without a deal. And the horrible news, Deron Bland with a different foot injury that is supposed to have him missing not just the Giants game, but weeks after that. It is worse. We'll preview that game, by the way, with Giants insider Paul Schwartz at 7:20 to kick off the commercial-free expressway on your official home of the Cowboys and Rangers. The injury news is worse for San Francisco. Brock Purdy supposed to miss multiple weeks.
Yeah, Brock Purdy is—he's definitely going to miss 1 week. It sounds like he's out this week, and that it's going to be Mac Jones. They called him a long shot to play. But Kyle Shanahan also said that he could potentially miss multiple weeks. He's dealing with a toe and left shoulder injury, and they both happened in the second quarter of the game against the Seahawks. So it wasn't bad enough that he couldn't finish the game, but it apparently has lingered to the point where. Finally, after 5 years, Mac Jones will get that start in San Francisco that Colin Cowherd promised everyone he was going to get when he said, oh, they're taking Mac Jones for sure. I got the word this morning. 100% Mac Jones at 3 to the 49ers.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, you look at this and now it's like, all right, so New Orleans was penciled in as a win for them on the schedule. Now, they're still, look, it's still probably one of those things where they're obviously the better team, but.
Guess the spread.
I would assume there's It's in New Orleans. I would assume there's a 4 to 5 point difference between Mac and Purdy, maybe 5.5. So I will say it is San Fran by 2.5.
3.5.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say with Purdy in there, I would assume it's 7.5. And so,
downgraded to 4 points then.
Must be about a 4 point.
Look, this is one of those things you've got to pray. That New Orleans picks them off. If you're a team at the Cowboys who may not have a division that they can win, but has a wild card they can win, this is one of those teams that you got to have upset.
Speaking of NFC quarterbacks, I was surprised by this. Bobby was floored by it. JJ McCarthy wins NFC Offensive Player of the Week. This had to be just Rookie of the Week, right?
No, this is Player of the Week, and I guess this is now a clutch award. Like, yeah, he was great down the stretch.
He was.
But, I mean, we're talking about 143 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick six is what he did in this game. He completed 14 passes. That was not the most prolific offensive performance in the NFC by a long shot this weekend. And so...
No. What was?
I don't know. I mean, take literally just about any other player because J.J. McCarthy was 29th in the NFL in EPA per dropback. I mean, that was basically on expected points added, the per-play efficiency. You're talking about... McCarthy was essentially the fourth worst quarterback in the NFL this past week.
Well, but I'm testing you. So I'm going to challenge the analytic
Hurts.
You just gave
Hurts
me.
Hurts was better.
Okay, so Hurts had... Is this just throwing? How many rushing touchdowns did he have?
Two.
All right, he did not have one throwing. So his QBR was a 94. So give me someone else.
I'll tell you this about McCarthy.
152 yes, there yards were, for Hurts.
There were other players... that were much better. I don't know that there was a player that had a more like memorable type game that I could think of off the top of my head. Like
his QBR was a 52.6 JJ's.
Yeah. Like out of going from the pick six to doing nothing for three quarters and then turning it on prime time. I mean, that was a great run that he had. That was a memorable performance because I think a lot of that was because it was the first time we saw him.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out other NFC performances because you could go Lamar, Allen, Henry, but they're all in the other conference.
Puka Nacua had 10 catches, 130 yards, and a win. And some of these came in losses. Like Penix and Bijan were big, but they obviously lost the game. But I mean, you could go, you probably could make a better case for, like I said, Hurts. Krosky Merritt, maybe.
Yeah.
McCarthy had 143 yards. I bet that's the lowest yardage total of anybody who's ever won that award.
Well, check Hurts. He probably snuck in, got his rear end pushed 4 times, and won the award with a .140 in the air. I love the question from Ralph James Choppy. Hey. Need your answer on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line. Woo! I cannot wait for this one tonight. The Packers hosting the Commanders.
Yeah, so I was thinking, who are we rooting for in this game? You got to have a rooting interest. Got to pick one. You can pick one at Underdog Fantasy. Promo code TOLA. But do you want Washington to lose for the division or Green Bay to lose for the draft pick?
And Micah.
Now, I went and looked. Green Bay plays... Nine. So just look at the schedule, right? Both teams have essentially they're right next. They're like 8 and 9 in strength of schedule, or 7 and 8 in strength of schedule, right? So they're right there. There's not like a huge difference. Green Bay plays 9 road games. They also play 9 playoff teams. Washington plays 8 road games. They got a neutral site game overseas. They play 8 road games and 8 playoff teams. So, again, not a huge discrepancy. Like, if one played 4 playoff teams, like, all right, that team's got to lose this game.
I think the answer is pretty easy for me right now. I'm rooting for Washington to lose. I got to focus on the division first and foremost. I don't think that the Packers are going to have a low draft pick, so what am I arguing about here? 25 versus 26 if they have an extra loss. I gotta start off with my mind in the NFC East.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on, like, is this who do you hate more? Like, if you're just looking at
or
it
your
from...
interest.
Yeah, if you're just looking at it from, like, I don't expect the Cowboys to be in the playoffs, so who do I want to see lose? Like, if you're looking at it from that perspective, I would imagine a lot of people would say they'd rather see... probably the Packers win. Maybe that's different parts.
If I don't think the Cowboys are making the playoffs, I'd rather the Commanders win for the draft pick.
So, with the playoffs in mind, I would rather the Commanders win. Because, to me, if you're talking about the playoffs, you're going to get in-division play. You're going to get 2 cracks at Washington. You've got the opportunity to best them in over the course of 6 division games. With Green Bay... Because you both play Washington, Green Bay is going to play Washington. You play Washington twice. If Green Bay loses and Dallas beats Washington twice, then that gives you better conference record tiebreaker, and it gives you better record in common games. And that's a big tiebreaker that hits pretty early.
Now, just emotionally watching with Mike and everything involved, what do you think you'll be yelling at the TV?
I'd still love Dan Quinn. So I'm probably going to get caught up in rooting to see him succeed.
Here's the thing. Like, you know, Green Bay is going to be in the playoffs, I think, regardless. So there's a floor on that playoff, on that pick. If they win the Super Bowl, they're picking 32. It doesn't matter whether they have 10,
yeah,
if they're 10-7 or not.
Emotionally. Like when Luka got dealt, we all wanted him to drop 70 on the Mavericks. Are you at a point right now with Parsons? I know a lot of Tolos will be rooting against. They want him to get blanked and shut down. Are you at a point where you're like, I want to see Micah tear it up and make Jerry pay and make the Cowboys look bad? Or you want to see Jerry made look correct and have him struggle?
I don't have any hate towards Green Bay. I don't have any hate towards Parsons. I don't have any hate towards Micah. I don't really... think that I don't think him playing poorly is going to move me at all. Okay. I don't think him playing well is going to make me go, oh crap, mm-hmm. either. So I'll root for Green Bay just because I have no hate for them. I don't like Washington. The long-term play is the pick, but, you know, like you mentioned, like if they're going to make the playoffs anyway, it doesn't really matter.
I know we're a couple weeks out from this. I don't think Mike is going to get a sack in that game in a couple weeks at AT&T Stadium.
You don't think he will?
I don't. Nope. And
why do you say that?
Because I think
it's a hell of a projection.
Because we've consistently seen with Micah, like when he presses, it doesn't yield results. And I think he's going to be pressing in that moment. But I would love, this just popped in my head.
I thought you were going to say that Jerry gave the headset called the quadruple team.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care if... Yeah, Rashawn.
We'll give up 10 sacks, yeah. But he's not going to be one of them.
Right.
I would love it if they open that game in a couple weeks. The very first play, they do a flea flicker. After Mike is like, trick plays are for bees and you can't beat somebody. Yeah. I would love to think of flea flicker right out of the gate.
They should.
Guys on the fan text, I think the Tolos are weighing more rooting for the Commanders than Green Bay here. Let's see.
What?
702 says I'm going for the Commanders because of the draft pick. 972 says 100% want Washington to win. 281 wants the Packers to win. 903, we're not contenders, so go Green Bay. And I'm with Sean here. I want Green Bay to win just because of the division aspect.
Man, that's the thing. If you truly know that you're not a contender,
we don't know.
We don't know. But
we're encouraged after the Eagle game.
Right, but we all know we're not a contender for the title.
Right.
We know that.
Yeah. Playoff contender.
Playoff contender, that's one thing. But contender for the title, we all know we're not.
I can't give up hope this early.
I assume they're not a playoff contender or a Super Bowl contender. You can't say with certainty anything this early in the season. Like I'm saying, there were a couple years ago, 2021, when they entered that season, they were coming off a 6-10 year. Nobody thought they were like a legit contender. And then by the time it rolled around, people were talking about Dallas as one of the big time ones.
Ian Rappaport had said that the Packers held trade talks with the Bengals about Trey Hendrickson before the Micah deal. So they were looking at Hendrickson instead of Parsons. And then Mike McCarthy is doing weeklies with McAfee. And he went back the other day to be honored for that Super Bowl team. And he told McAfee, I did have an opportunity to meet with Jerry in June before we moved back to Green Bay. How about that? Someone moving back to Green Bay. He thought he had a deal done with Micah. I always anticipated they would get a deal done. Time kills deals. That from Big Mike.
I can't wait to listen to the interview today. I'm sure it'll be just like anything. Tomorrow morning, we'll have a four-hour breakdown of every answer that Mike McCarthy gave to Pat McAfee.
Is it every Thursday?
Every Thursday during the season. He's the new. He's like the new Aaron Rodgers.
Is Rodgers off?
Oh, well, like he's like a new Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, yeah. Not like replacing, but
a
new
Aaron Rodgers.
877-881-1053. Live on the FanCamp, Twitch, and YouTube. Thank you all for turning it on, leaving it on. Let's hook you up with PBR tickets. We got the Neighborhood Watch, a disturbing Neighborhood Watch at 740. But next, one of our favorites, New York Giants insider Paul Schwartz. Do they already want Russell out? Is Brian Daboll done? And does Malik Nabers really have NBF? Paul Schwartz from New York after this.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We got the Neighborhood Watch coming up at 7:40. The great Matt Hicks, Rangers play-by-play voice on this unbelievable run at 8. Day off today, New York Mets tomorrow. Let's head on out to New York for a Giants preview with our friend Paul Schwartz from the New York Post on your home of the Dallas Cowboys via the D&M leasing hotline. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How you guys? I imagine you're better than the state of the Giants right now.
Man. When I sit here and talk about the Cowboys and worry and all the drama, I do look at a team like I said, the Colts first. That made me look bad. That makes you all feel even worse because of Daniel Jones' debut. But being a Giant fan to like start off the season, like it has to suck until Jackson Dart takes over, right?
Well, it wasn't supposed to be this bad before Jackson Dart takes over. I mean, the plan was to let Russell play, let Russell Wilson play. And look, you guys know when there's a first-round pick, the lifeline's not going to be really long. And, I didn't think Russell Wilson was going to start all 17 games. But the big problem was, you guys know, every season you feel like it's a new season. And even if it's kind of the same team, I want to see what it's going to look like, right? Maybe it's going to be a little different. You know, in Dallas, you have a new coach, so that's always interesting.
Yeah.
There's not a new coach with the Giants, but and the problem was it looked exactly the same on offense. You know, it looked like the 18th game of last season instead of the first game of this season. And you know what? Maybe that's a little bit to be expected because 10 of the 11 starters they brought back on offense, and the other one, only one they changed was the quarterback. So maybe they needed to change more of the other starters on offense as well.
Paul, did you actually think Daboll was going to possibly make a quarterback change for week two? And who did you think they should have started the season with?
I thought Russell Wilson. You know, Russell Wilson is, look, we've all seen, we know what he did in Seattle. We know what he didn't do in Denver. We know what he didn't do in Pittsburgh. He was not their first choice. You know, they wanted to trade for Matt Stafford and pay him $50 million a year. Remember back in the summer when it was like, in the spring, I guess, when it was like, Matt Stafford is available, but he wasn't. And they wanted to sign Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers didn't decide, and they couldn't wait. So they signed Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson brought a certain gravitas, charisma. You know, he is still an incredibly strong leader. The question was, does he have enough in the tank? You know what I mean? And in the spring and summer, it looked like he did have, he's moving well. He physically, I didn't look at him in training camp and say the guy can't do it anymore. The first game was a total breakdown of offensive line, and it wasn't all his fault. He didn't rise above anything. So I thought they should have started the season with Russell Wilson because there's no need to start Jackson Dart right away. Don't forget, he was not the first or second pick in the draft. He was the 25th pick in the draft. They did not think he was going to be one of those guys like Cam Ward who was ready to play right away. What happened in the summer? He looked better than everyone thought, and he looked better than Daboll thought, and Daboll clearly loves the guy. So I don't think there's a rush here. It's not like the Giants are going to make in the Super Bowl anytime soon. I did not think that. I would have been stunned if Brian Daboll came out the other day and said, you know, we were going with Jackson Dart. I mean, it's just not fair to Russell Wilson at this point. I think they've got the button, their finger on the button with Jackson Dart, but they're not going to press it just yet.
Paul Schwartz, New York Post, joining us here, 105.3 The Fan. All right, so the excitement around Dart, is it real or is it just because he's somebody different? Like, what have you seen that the team has liked about him in the summer and in training camp?
He really couldn't have had a better spring and summer. I mean, you know, and I'm saying that as a guy who's covered the team for the long time. So I'm not just not like, oh my gosh, this guy looks great. You know, there's plenty of quarterbacks who don't look great when they come in. He does have a charisma. He's got, you know, from doing some research, you know, the Ole Miss program, he was like a recruiter at Ole Miss. You know, he has this innate ability to get guys on the team to like him and to want to be around him. So I can see that already. And he was really good in training camp. You know, Brian Daboll, you know, for his faults as a head coach, you know, I think he has a great plan for how he develops young quarterbacks. And, you know, it didn't work with Daniel Jones, but he tried. He did not have Daniel Jones at the start of this. You know, he's not a miracle worker. He got Daniel Jones, you know, halfway through his, you know, his NFL experience. But Dart looked really good in training camp. And he, Daboll used to do some really funky things with him. You know, all of a sudden he'd just say, Jackson, get in the game, you know, get in the play, get in with the first team, do this. Jameis, you come out on this, 2-minute drill in practice, Jackson, you go in. One point, it was actually funny. Jameis Winston said, I feel like I'm back in New Orleans with Taysom Hill. I'm getting taken out at the goal line here, even in practice. And he looked really good in the preseason games. I mean, really good. So I think more of him now than I did when they drafted him. And I am very interested in seeing him play. But you know what? If their offensive line plays the way it did in Washington and their three running backs total 30 yards, it's not going to matter who the quarterback is. So I think they want to get things set up a little better, maybe get Andrew Thomas back at left tackle, and then at least give the kid a chance.
Paul, you mentioned right there the offensive line and Andrew Thomas, who was unable to go in week one. What is the expectation for his availability this weekend? And if Andrew Thomas isn't able to go, what's the plan for the Giants at tackle?
Oh, the plan is to play poorly at tackle. with a veteran James Hudson, who did not play well in the first game. You know what? Tune in Friday because Andrew Thomas did not practice yesterday. It was a running day for him, and then see how he felt. And he's supposed to practice today and tomorrow. I would imagine there will be a limited participation in practice, certainly today. So I would say last week I would say, you know, he's listed as doubtful. I would guess this week he'll be listed as questionable. I wouldn't bet on him playing because, I mean, he's coming off Liz Frank. And you guys know, it's not a receiver or a cornerback who you can, or an edge rusher who you can say, you know what, he's ready. He's not ready for full time. Let's play him 14 snaps. You know, we'll put him in on third down. He's the left tackle. You can't put him in on third down. I mean, I guess you could have him play two series and then have him sit a third. But that's not great for continuity on the offensive line. But, you know, they're kind of desperate. So if he can play, he will. I really don't have a great answer. I would guess right now, if you ask me to lay $100 on it, I would say he won't play. And even if he does play, I can't see him playing 65 snaps.
Paul Schwartz from the New York Post joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Paul, what's the level of concern among Giants fans that some of these blow-ups or some of these issues that have occurred with Malik Nabers in the first 2 years already might be kind of laying the foundation for a split at some point?
No, none. None as far as a split. I mean, I can't speak for all fans. I mean, fans get worried about, you know, what they're having for breakfast in the morning. And, you know, if they don't want to use their New York Giants, you know, cup or something because the Giants had a bad game, you know. But I mean, and Malik really talked about it. I mean, yeah, not really. He talked about it yesterday and he said, well, I have NBF. I have natural bitch face, which is not exactly the phrase, right? I think it's resting bitch phrase is it, resting.
We got it, Paul. We got the B word. We got it.
You got it. I mean, the FCC is not going to jump in here, right?
No, I don't think so.
Our boss might.
We're okay. But he did say it. And you know, Malik and Daboll are kind of similar. They're hotheads in a little bit of a sense, and they're very highly competitive. look, when you're losing all the time, and he was targeted 12 times and caught 5 passes. I mean, that's not – 12 targets is great. 5 catches is not great, you know. And so he's frustrated. So I don't think – I mean, I've been around him for, you know, one season and part of this season now. I don't think Malik Nabers is a problem. I think he is young and he gets frustrated and he knows he's good and the Giants know he's good. And it's incredibly frustrating to him when they don't score a lot of points and the quarterbacks can't get him the ball and he runs a good route and he looks back and the quarterback's on his back because the offensive line can't protect. So I don't think it's any more than that. So I know, look, they lose and there's a between the first and second quarter, you see the two guys yelling at each other. But Malik said it wasn't get me the ball or anything like that. He knows he's a good player, and the production's not there. So I think it's that. I think it's too early to say that there's a problem there. You know, he's not that kind of a guy.
Paul, were you surprised they brought Daboll back? And what does he really have to do to keep his job?
Well, some people think he just has to play Jackson Dart, right? And it's a lifeline. I don't think it goes that far. Look, they went from 9 wins his first year. He was the NFL Coach of the Year. Then it went 6 wins the next year. Daniel Jones got hurt, you know, so that was kind of a, you know, you don't get a pass because it's not like Patrick Mahomes getting hurt, but he was their starting quarterback coming off a decent year. And then, so they go from 9 to 6 to 3. So I was not... I mean, I thought it was very tenuous, you know, that he would come back. But John Mara has said many times, I can't keep on firing guys after 2 years. I just can't do it. You know, he did it with Ben McAdoo. He did it with Pat Shurmur. He did it with Joe Judge. You know, and he just, I can't keep on doing that. So Brian Daboll got a reprieve because of that, you know, because the owner said, I can't be one of those franchises that just fires guys, even though the record would indicate that you certainly could fire him. He knows that Daboll and Joe Shane, the GM, came together from Buffalo, and they get along great. So there's no friction there. That's good. What does he have to do? I mean, you can't win 3 games again. I know people think, well, if they put Jackson Dart in, then he gets a, you know, get out of jail card. But you know what? Jackson Dart also has to come in and play well, right? And has to win a few games. You know, John Mara can also look at this after the season and say, okay, Jackson started 12 games. He didn't look good. So I'm not going with the theory that I can't bring in somebody else to work with Jackson because that would be, you know, a lack of continuity. I don't want continuity because Jackson didn't look good. There's no guarantee he will come in and play well. So I think they need to win some games, you know, and they can't win 3 or 4. The schedule's really hard. I think Jackson Dart has to come in and play well. And John Mara said at the end of last year, I have to be, you know, ask, you know, what do these guys have to do next year to stay? He didn't give a number or playoffs. He said, I have to be in a better mood at this time next year than I am now. I would say the best litmus test is at the end of the year, does John Mara and the majority of the fans look at it and say, oh my God, thank God the season's over? Or do they say, you know what? We weren't great, but I'm kind of looking forward to 2026 with Jackson Dart and what we have. We didn't do great, but I think we see signs here. That's the key. Look, they're not a great team. They're probably not a good team. And what they were last week was a rotten team, and that's alarming. So this week against a team they never beat, and I'm sure if we go on for another half hour here, which we won't, you'll tell me all the reasons why the Cowboys are beatable, right? But nobody is beatable to the Giants if they play like they did last week.
Paul, you mentioned there that you don't feel like the Giants are a great team, and they may not even be a good team, but if the Giants were to come in here and win this game on Sunday against the Cowboys, what is it you think that, what does that look like? Like, how do you think they're doing that? Is that just feeding Malik Nabers a ton? Is that Tyrone Tracy gets the ball and is running wild on them? How do the Giants have success to the point that they come in here and upset Dallas?
Yeah, I always like that question because it's like, okay, force me to think about how they can win because I spend a lot of time figuring out how they're going to lose, you know, because they don't look good. No, that's good. I would say number one on defense is they stopped the run. You know, they gave up 220 rushing yards last year. You guys know the Commanders have a very intricate running scheme, and they have Jaden Daniels, who just is almost impossible to corral. So I won't give them a pass because they weren't a good run defense last year. But I would say if they can make Dak throw the ball, they have good pass rushers. You know what I mean? You know, Abdul Carter is not Micah Parsons, but I think he's the closest thing in the league that can be Micah Parsons and eventually be a Parsons-type player. You know, he's the prototype of that, and he didn't get he only got, you know, half the snaps last week and looked pretty good. Brian Burns had two sacks. Kayvon Thibodeau had a sack against a guy that's very difficult to sack. So if they can earn the right to rush the passer, I think they will rush the passer. You know, I think they have guys who can do that. And I think offensively, they just have to run the ball a little bit. You know, they're not a great running team. You know, Cam Scatterboo, the rookie, everyone's very excited about him. He's a banger. He got hit behind the line of scrimmage almost every time. So, they have to run the ball. You know, Russell Wilson can do play action stuff, and he had none of that last week because there was no action to play. You know, there's no threat of a run. So, I see the Cowboys are going to be down a cornerback, it looks like. Darius Slayton had no catches last week. I mean, there's a recipe for victory for the Giants, but, every time I go in that building, you know, other than, you know, the first time with Eli Manning when he signed the wall, it's kind of a disaster. So, to me, Dak Prescott's a Hall of Famer because he's beaten the Giants 13 straight times, and almost every time I see him play the Giants, he looks great.
Paul, Bobby's a huge fan of Cam Scatterboo.
Nope, not. I'm a Texas fan.
He loves him. But truthfully, like, how much of his game is, I don't want to say gimmick, but, like, is just lowering his head and trying to drive through a defensive player versus make a real impact?
Well, that's I saw, not going to fly in the NFL. You know what I mean? I mean, it's funny because you stand down and I talk to Cam Scatterboo and I'm a little taller than him. You know what? I'm not tall. he's a little more powerful than me and I'm not powerful. So that's okay. look, he's a really good pass catcher. You know what I mean? And he looked good in the summer doing that. So they need to incorporate that. Tyrone Tracy, the starting running back, is also a good pass catcher. He was a wide receiver before he was a running back. So, I don't know yet. I don't know about Cam Scatterboo. Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be able to bounce off tackles in the NFL, but he's got some – he's shiftiness to him. But, yeah, I mean, you know, lowering his head is not going to work. I can't stress enough how last week was so dysfunctional, and that's why Giants fans, you know, just could not – you know, they were pulling their hair out because – I mean, the Commanders won 14 games last year, right? Two in the regular season and two in the playoffs. The Giants won three. I mean, these teams are not comparable. So to have the Giants lose opening day on the road in Washington is not a disaster. Yeah. But to score 6 points and be in the red zone and look like, you know, the goal line is a force field they can't penetrate is an issue. I mean, if they lost 27-17 and, all right, they scored a couple of touchdowns and they didn't look great. Maybe they had a turnover. But, you know, there's something. I mean, there's literally nothing on offense to build on. Nothing. Not Russ, not the running game, not the passing game, not the protection. So that's why everyone was like, I can't believe this. It's worse than it was last year, and we were sold a bill of goods that it will be better. So,
Paul, do the Giants have the worst ownership and front office in the division?
Well, I'm not going to say that. I mean, let fans say that. I think they have done some good things in the draft. They do not have the worst ownership in the division. In the division, ownership? No. The Giants have won two Super Bowls since the Cowboys have won a Super Bowl. You know, I'm not going to go ownership by ownership here. You know, the Commanders' ownership is new. I don't think John Mara is a bad owner at all, at all. I think he's lost his way a little bit and maybe hired some wrong people. And, we could go down a litany of things that maybe he has done wrong football wise, but no, I think he is, his heart's in the right place. I think his head often is in the right place. And, maybe he has to take a step back when he's, you know, involved in the hiring process and things like that. But, no, I don't think he's a terrible owner. I think they're in a very bad rut here, and it's a franchise that is in, wouldn't call it disarray. They just they need to get out of this rut. And I don't put it this way. I don't think their roster is terrible. I don't think it's terrible. You know, I said before the season, this is not a roster that should win three or four games. It's not. The defensive personnel is not bad. It's not. It's actually quite okay or maybe even good if you go man-to-man, you know, down the list. It really is not. I thought they overrated their offensive line, and I'm still concerned about that, especially on the interior. You know, they like their players better than I like their players, and, you know, we'll see who's going to come out right in that. You know, I thought Russell Wilson had something left in the tank. Not a lot, because I'm not blind to what he's done the last few years. And, you know, last week was a disaster on all fronts on offense. So, you know, but no, I don't need to debate here, but I still don't understand why getting rid of Micah Parsons is a good thing for the franchise. I just don't understand it. I don't understand it. And you know what? I'm sure the Giants offensive linemen, you know, and I saw some of their tweets like, oh, thank goodness.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Goodbye. We don't have to play. They do have to play the Packers once, but they don't have to play Micah twice.
Paul, we love having you on every year. Thank you so much. We appreciate the time. Try to enjoy the game and the season.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Take care.
Paul Schwartz, New York Post on the D&M Leasing Hotline on the home of the Cowboys. Let's hook you up for turning it on, leaving it on.
All right, Tolos, that's right. Right now, call the number 10 at 877-881-1053. Wins a pair of tickets to see professional bull riding on September 26th at Dickies Arena in Fort Worth. That's call the number 10 at 877-881-1053.
Matt Hicks, play-by-play voice of the Red Hot Rangers, will join us at 8 o'clock today here on Sean and RJ. Let's go local.
We need to take people out of their bubbles and their safe place and make them think about the world we live in.
You are fake news.
So what do you guys hear? What's the scuttlebutt?
What the hell happened in East Dallas yesterday? This was just a jarring headline. It's the first time I've ever had Kristen text me content for a segment where she's like, you need to put this in there tomorrow. So she had sent me this story. And she's like, put this in Neighborhood Watch tomorrow. And this was a big story yesterday. Kind of got overshadowed by some other stuff a little bit later in the day. But this story out of East Dallas, where a suspect is in custody after a motel beheading. He is charged with capital murder. This is over in the 3400 block of Samuel Boulevard at the Downtown Suites Motel. This is near I-30 and the Tennyson Golf Course in East Dallas.
Right by my first house.
So, yeah, I mean, that's then you know this area. You know the way they get down with beheadings over there. Yeah. So, police said they were called to...
I'm on the phone with friends talking about Charlie Kirk and the Ukrainian girl, and they're like, oh, yeah, what about Dallas and the beheading?
Yeah.
Beheading.
Just, I mean, this is the kind of crime that when it's committed... It's like, whoa, okay, hold on, stop. Yeah. This isn't just like there was a, like, police and everybody else, they're going to go, all right, what happened here? Why did this happen? What potential? Because of all the different beheading issues you've had with cartel and different things like that, they instantly just kind of slow down and go, okay, wait, let's take a look and figure out what exactly this case is. But police said they were called to a stabbing call at the scene around 9:30 in the morning yesterday, and they found a suspect had cut a person, quote, with an edged weapon several times. Dallas Fire Rescue also responded to the scene where the victim died. Officials say the suspect is charged with capital murder. So the details of the arrest are this. So the victim was 50-year-old Chandra Nagamalaya, and the suspect is 37-year-old Jordanis Cobos Martinez. And the police said that the witnesses told police that Cobos Martinez became upset because the victim was speaking to someone that he was standing with. He was out there, he was trying to do some laundry, and the victim walked up and said, hey, you can't use that. That's a broken washing machine. But was talking to the person that he was standing with. Like, almost like, hey, you need a translator. Like just assumed that he wouldn't be able to speak. He took big time offense to the fact that you were speaking to the person he was with instead of directly to him. He took that to mean, you just don't think I can speak English, or there's some reason that you're not directing this at me. And so they said at that point, surveillance video shows Cobos Martinez leave the room, pull out a machete, and begin attacking. They say the victim attempted to escape the assault by running to the front office. They said during the assault, Cobos Martinez paused to go through the victim's pockets, took several items. The suspect also fought off the victim's wife and son multiple times as they tried to intervene. But this ultimately ended up being a just brutal, violent crime. Dallas police have him in custody, though, and he is facing capital murder now.
I really didn't know how to react to this. I was like, behead? That's not real. Beheading? People don't get beheaded. Not in the U.S. Like Bobby said, cartel. You see, like ISIS stuff from years ago. That doesn't happen in a hotel room.
Yeah, you got to wait for the new Street Fighter movie to come out for this.
Is that a movie coming out?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you got to check out the cast.
Okay.
It's like Jason Momoa and stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah. Pepe, any idea what Street Fighter is?
No idea.
Bobby, is that too young for you?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
I don't know Street Fighter.
It's kind of like in that Mortal Kombat game range for us.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. I'm looking up pictures of it now. Yeah, I know that. I know that game.
Yeah.
It
was fun. I love the, because you could jump and kick. I never thought you'd be able to jump higher than somebody's head and then come down forward.
Was this on
while
a
suspended in air?
Was this on a console or this was just arcade? NES. I remember playing this. Playing this like arcade.
50 Cent, Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, Noah Centineo. I don't know some of these names. I'd embarrass myself. Reyna, Valadink. A lot of people. A lot of stars. Orville Peck. I know that name.
The entire concept of the beheading. It's so over the top. Like murders happen every day and they shouldn't. But then you throw beheading on there. There are people who saw it. Yeah.
They're in the parking lot looking at this.
And the fact that, and look, I love that we have cameras everywhere to be able to maybe, so like the video on the train in Charlotte, like we're able to see who did it.
I figured you may not like that because of spying on our privacy.
I don't care about that. Spy on me. I got nothing to hide.
Yeah.
I have nothing to hide. Spy on me all you want. I don't care. You want to watch? Watch. Like enjoy.
Just bring a tripod.
And pay.
Enjoy the show. Yeah, right. Yeah. Enjoy the show. My policy is I'm open. I'm comfortable with that. Because I assume I'm getting spied on anyway.
Yeah.
But it is also opening things up to where like we are so almost desensitized to it.
Oh, not almost. Like, murder and killing is desensitized.
Completely.
Oh, yeah.
Child school. No one, this Colorado, kids got killed in Colorado yesterday at a school. DeMarvion Overshone is the one I saw post about it the most, saying it's like the 40th incident. We are totally desensitized to it. It's frightening.
Well, and the amount that we, like, visually see it, like not just the number of stories that are out there and just like, oh yeah, another story, and you become kind of numb to it, but it's the fact that you're now numb to even seeing it almost, because I remember the very first time I had seen a video of someone, you know, being killed, and it was, I saw it by accident on the internet when I was like 11 years old, and when I saw it, I remember like it rattled me for like days. And now it's one of those things where I feel like once a week some video pops up on social media or on the TV or something else where it's like you see it happen. And that's the other thing that I think is just has numbed us to all of it and kind of taken the soul out of it.
Like I really wish I didn't see that Charlie Kirk video. If you have not seen it, if you have managed to stay away from it,
I'd avoid it.
Consider yourself lucky. Like that is as gruesome as it gets. I'm still like shocked.
Yeah,
that it hasn't been completely removed.
The one video,
from every platform.
The one video I sent of you guys of him falling to the left. That I told you that will haunt me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Watching that and his body and what happened. Watching him that I don't want to get too graphic. That's haunting.
Yeah, it's one of those things where those images are going to kind of stick with you. We talk about kind of being numb to it. We saw the president. This is 24 years, 9/11. Like, I mean, there are so many just various big-time images that we've seen of tragedy and things like that. It's part of the overexposure of social media and cameras and the, you know, 24-hour news world that we're in now. All right, last few minutes here of Neighborhood Watch, and I'm going to turn it over to RJ Choppy, who has a Neighborhood Watch item.
Yes, I'm not even sure I'm supposed to talk about this, but I don't care.
Do it. Do it. They're spying on you anyway.
All right. So a week or so ago, I got someone sent me a screenshot of a Facebook post from this mom's group. Okay? Colleyville Moms. Mm. And on it are kids' palm of their hand. Okay? And you can see little red marks on the palm of their hand. Very small, kind of like where the thumb meets the fat part of your palm. Right there, right? And they were saying, this is unacceptable. The middle school football coach made them do bear crawls on the field. And they got blisters because the turf was too hot.
Oh, it was turf. Colleyville had to be turf.
Pretty much all football fields in DFW are turf.
Oh.
Football fields. It's just, I honestly, have you seen a grass field around?
Not around here. Not that I can think of.
So, and look, I know the coach. The coach of that team coached my son. My older son. And I know a lot of parents on that team. And this is just a complete and utter overreaction to what happened. First of all the parents on that team that I talked to said this was the kids that got the blisters while they were doing the bear crawls had their hands on the turf the entire time and were dragging them across, not lifting them up to like walk. And that's in part how they got the blisters. The reason that they were asked to do this is because they, from what I was told, they trashed the locker room. And this was a punishment. Hey, locker room's trash. Whole team's got to go out there and do this. But to try to go get this coach fired because your little angel was doing something wrong in the locker room or whatever the punishment was, is garbage. This dude is not a go out there and let's... He's not. This isn't little Tykes. This isn't a little Tykes coach. It's a teacher. It's an awesome guy.
Yeah, and just by the way you're representing it, I don't think the question would be, hey, your kid was doing something wrong, or they did this. Right. I think at that point, just the debate is the punishment the right thing? Which, I don't know, maybe that is the right way to handle it. I'm just saying, I think the question at that point would not be, did your kids do wrong? That would seem to be, yeah, there needed to be some sort of punishment.
Hey, look,
did it just
right?
fit the crime?
If two or five kids tear up a locker room, you know, should they be punished or the whole team get punished, right? It's usually, in team sports, it's the whole team.
This is about...
It's like Fran Brown. The whole team ran. Not a couple of people who were loafing on the field.
Yeah.
The entire team runs. That's how it works.
I think this is... I'm just kind of Googling around because I know we've talked about this sort of thing before. This is feels like the fifth or sixth story in the last 2 years of bear crawls as a punishment in Texas leading to some sort of burn and there being controversy. I can't see a resolution on any of these. So I don't know if there was actual punishment. And the fact that it keeps happening maybe says that this hasn't been like an outlawed punishment yet. So...
Well, it's like, okay, if I have you run all the extra sprints and you turn your ankle, am I going to catch backlash for that? Like the turf was hot. I mean, if it's to where, you know, you can't have a dog walk on it, that's an issue probably. But
yeah,
I guess I can't remember bear crawls and exactly what other negative things could come from it. What dehydration are we talking about?
So 817 says, the pebbles on the turf caused the blisters. This isn't because of the heat. It's friction. Those little pellets that fly up when a toe drag happens on TV are on turf fields. It's like, get over it and stop trashing locker rooms is what 817 says.
I mean, so if you're dragging your hands the whole time, you know, that's going to create the turf burn. I don't know. I just found that really, that was upsetting. Like the fact that the
what about the Oklahoma drill?
I know, right? They're doing that. They're doing the Oklahoma drill on beaches at spring break. That's how I know summer's here.
Neighborhood Watch every Thursday. Always send in your local stories to Bobby, Roberto Bell, or any of us here during the commercial-free expressway. Congrats to the Tolo who won the PBR ticket giveaway. The sweep that no one thought was possible. How the heck is it happening? Voice of the Rangers, Matt Hicks, joins us from New York next on Sean and RJ.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.